traveling, writing, speaking, and producing videos. Dr. Craig, you have a lot on your plate. What's going on with Reasonable Faith?
Well, we've been working this summer primarily on my book on the atonement. I've not been traveling and speaking much during the summer, but every day I'm in my study writing this book on the atonement. I've got two books, actually, that I'm working on. There's one shorter book that is under contract with Cambridge University Press that I hope to call Elements of the Atonement. And then I'm using that book as a kind of skeleton, which I'm then fleshing out to write a longer, more scholarly book on the atonement. And that book is now about one-third finished, or at least in first draft. I began writing on August 1st, and as of today, I've finished the first part of that book in first draft. The book is divided into three parts. Part one is the biblical data concerning the doctrine of the atonement. This, I believe, is especially important, Kevin, because Christian philosophers writing on the atonement today are generally ignorant of the biblical material. They aren't trained in biblical exegesis, and so the way in which they construct theories of the atonement is typically to look at the way reconciliation occurs between human persons when there's a rift between them, and then they try to apply that model to divine human relationships. And I think this methodology is just fraught with problems because of the disanalogies between God's relationship to us and the relationship of one human person to another. And the danger of that kind of flawed methodology is constructing a theory of the atonement, which, however congenial it might be, just is not a Christian theory of the atonement because it is not adequate to the biblical data. So the first part of the book is a very serious attempt to look at the biblical data concerning the atonement, to use that as a kind of proof stone for then assessing theories of the atonement. Part two of the book, which I'm going to be writing next, is on the history of the doctrine of the atonement. And here I will survey some of the main highlights of the history of doctrine with respect to the atonement. So I'll look at the so-called Christus Victor model of the early church fathers, Anselm's satisfaction theory, Abelard's moral influence theory of the atonement, the Protestant reformers' penal substitution view of the atonement, and Hugo Grotius's governmental theory of the atonement. In order to get some theories of the atonement that are classical, traditional, and influential on the table, and then that will lead to part three, which is philosophical reflections on the doctrine of the atonement, where I will assess these various theories and models and try to articulate and defend a philosophically coherent and biblically adequate theory of the atonement.
This can also be an opportunity for people to join you in your study on video. You've been doing this series, Join Me in My Study, almost exclusively on the atonement.
It has been almost exclusively on the atonement because I've just been preoccupied with this subject now for many months. And so in these little five-minute videos that Jan and I do every Thursday, I update people on my progress on my study on the atonement, though on occasion there are other subjects as well that are covered. For example, I'm preparing for a debate with Eric Wielenberg, the naturalistic ethicist, on the best account of objective moral values and duties, which he, like me, wants to affirm. I've also been doing some video recording of late, and so in a recent Join Me in My Study, I talk about that. But predominantly, it has been the subject of the atonement that has preoccupied me.
Speaking of video, there's a real buzz on the latest Zangmeister video on the problem of evil. These are illustrations, they are video, they are animated illustrations of so many aspects of your work and the work of Reasonable Faith, the latest one on the problem of evil. A lot of people have really responded to this.
I'm so gratified to hear that. I think that the Zangmeister, as I call him, is enormously talented. And there are actually two videos that we've just released on the problem of evil and suffering. It would have been too long to combine them into one. We want to keep them around 5 minutes so as to keep people's attention. So he divided it into two. The first one is on the logical version of the problem of evil and suffering. That's the claim that God and the evil and suffering in the world are logically inconsistent with each other. They cannot logically both be affirmed. The second animated video is on the probability version of the problem of evil, which says, all right, God and the evil in the world are logically consistent, but nevertheless, given the evil and suffering in the world, it's highly improbable that God exists. And that problem is discussed in the second video, along with the emotional problem of evil. And that closes out the second video, I think, in a very powerful way, because I'm convinced, Kevin, that for the vast majority of people, the problem of evil and suffering really isn't an intellectual problem at all. It's really an emotional problem. And so that needs to be addressed in a powerful and direct way.
I heard a speaker the other day say that even if God were to tell you why I did this, why you suffered this, why this happened, what A, B, and C, and D were on the components of why you went through this suffering, you would still have to go through the suffering.
Yes, you know, I mean, I imagine that a great many people, having heard the explanation, would be filled with resentment that God would do this. I mean, suppose, for example, he says, the reason I allowed your daughter to be run over by a car backing out of the driveway and killed is because in 300 years, through the ripple effect of that event through history, a Mexican peasant is going to come to know Christ personally and find eternal life. That might not satisfy that person who loses the little daughter. That might lead to bitterness and resentment that God would do such a thing. So you're absolutely right. Answering the intellectual question doesn't resolve the emotional problem.
Yeah, but it helps. I will just tell you, going through what I did, but losing my son,
yes,
it did help.
Good.
I'm still going through it, but knowing that there are two aspects of the problem of evil helped.
I've heard this from others as well. Gary Habermas, who lost his wife to cancer, has said the same thing, that having good intellectual answers can help you to cope with the emotional anguish and rising resentment or bitterness against God that one might feel.
We'll have some more podcasts coming up on this in recent weeks. Some traveling abroad.
Well, one of the trips that Jan and I are doing this year is to Germany. I have been invited to present a paper at the Deutsche Gesellschaft für Philosophie, which is the national German organization in philosophy. It's the German Philosophical Society. And they'll be meeting in Berlin, and I'll be giving a paper entitled Platonismus, Naturalismus und Gott, Platonism, Naturalism, and God. And in this paper, I argue that Platonism poses problems for both naturalism and for theism, and that therefore this is an area where naturalists and theists can come together in a common interest of answering the arguments for Platonism, to give a solution to those arguments, and thereby allow both the naturalist and the theist to sleep more comfortably. And I have two German respondents. One is Professor Kanzian, and the other is Professor Stöckler from Bremen and Innsbruck. And then I will have a chance to give a response to their comments, which are very favorable, I have to say. I was very pleased to see how these two German philosophers responded to me. As a Christian, American, evangelical philosopher, it was really gratifying. And so I'm looking forward to our discussion.
Yeah, this is a chance for you to brush up on your German, too.
Oh, you said it. That's very
You might need
true.
To order Rosetta Stone or something to get that down. The Israel tour as
right.
well.
Right. Jan and I have then, later in the year, been invited to Israel along with a group of Christian leaders from the United States in order to see personally reconciliation efforts between Israelis and Palestinians. And so this will not simply be a touristic kind of trip, but an educational trip, getting to see a different side of Israel than the normal tourist sees. And so we're looking very much forward to this.
Good. Let's extend into next year a little bit. Two big overseas trips coming up.
Yes. First, in March, we have a long speaking trip to Brazil, which will take us to conferences, universities, and churches. This is very exciting for me, Kevin, because I am convinced that Brazil is going to be a shaping force in worldwide Christianity during this century, as well as a secular force geopolitically. It is an enormously influential and rich country, and Christianity in Brazil, and by that I mean evangelical Christianity, is surging and booming. But very often it is enormously emotional and charismatic and lacks theological and apologetical substance. Five of my books now have been translated into Portuguese and are available in Brazil, and this speaking trip will coordinate with the publisher to make these materials available to people in the audience. So this is a chance to have input into the Brazilian church in, I think, a very significant way. So I'm looking forward to that trip. The other trip is to England later in the year, and this is a really unusual trip. I received an invitation to deliver the Gore Lecture at the elite English preparatory boys' school called Harrow. Harrow is one of the top boarding schools in England and includes among its graduates many prime ministers, such as Winston Churchill. Four of its graduates became kings of England. Many parliamentarians are graduates of Harrow. And so I feel so honored, so privileged to be invited to speak to this group of young boys as they go on then to future university study and positions of influence. While in England, then, I've also been invited to be a speaker at a kind of TED conference that is being held there called How the Light Gets In. This is a secular conference that features speakers from various disciplines, as well as a music festival to provide a kind of lighter side to the conference. And they're putting me on panels with non-Christian secularists on subjects like the meaning of life, the relationship between science and religion, the foundations of morality. And so this looks to be a very good opportunity, again, to be a light for the gospel in a secular setting.
This is an amazing festival. If you just look at some of the history of it, Bill, it's called An Intoxicating and Unique Mix of Ideas and Playfulness. All this music and then all of these ideas and experiences. And so this is really going to be a unique experience. I'm glad you're going to be there.
I almost know what to expect, but yeah. I think you're right, Kevin. I think it's going to be very unusual. And combined with the Harrow lectures, what a wonderful opportunity. And being an Anglophile anyway, I'm delighted to be back in England for these events.
This sounds like a full schedule. We asked that people would pray for you and Jan as you travel and as you continue your writing and speaking.
Thank you, Kevin. And this is just the mountaintops. I mean, there are many, many other things on the schedule, including the debate with Eric Wielenberg and other university events and conferences. So there is a lot scheduled for 2018.